Well, that was Eric Clapton with "To Forever Man." Now we can get on to the fun stuff. Welcome to the studio, Susan.
Thank you so much for having me, Margaret.
Now, Susan, you're a presenter with Community Radio, but you're a very specialist presenter, aren't you? You only play a certain kind of music.
I just play vinyl only. So yes, and I've been doing that pretty much from home since COVID, from my little studio downstairs. We call the dungeon, but right. Yes, but I'm not experienced in being an interviewee, that's for sure.
Oh, it's always a first time for everything, Susan, and I could not imagine myself flipping records. It would be so hard.
Oh, there's been times when I've put it on the wrong speed, so yeah, you learn very quickly. Like, no one noticed.
So Susan's our vinyl specialist, but today you're here for a very different purpose, Susan. You've got a really... It seems like it's an undercover operation going on, but it's a really special childhood learning centre that you're involved with.
Yes, I work for Gowrie, New South Wales, mm-hmm. and I work on TAFE campus, but not for TAFE, working for Gowrie. And we have the Early Learning Centre, and it's for the children of the parents while they're learning English at TAFE as part of the Adult Migrant English Program. We run the service for the children that they get government funding for childcare while they're learning English.
Right. Can you just tell us a little bit, before we go on to what you're doing here, what is Gowrie Australia?
Well, it's basically we've been going for 80 years, 80 plus years now.
Wow.
and it's based around Lady Gowrie, Lady Zara Gowrie, who was married to the Governor General of New South Wales.
Mm.
And
it's a really good backstory with this.
I
learned about this when I lived in Sydney with little toddlers. Yeah,
and she basically lobbied for, to establish early childhood centres across Australia. Saw a gap that children needed money, especially around the Second World War, where men were going off to war and the women were left at home with the children, but had to work.
Mm.
So, and also wanting to care for disadvantaged children, saw a need to have centres for children, for parents or mothers that had to work.
It's really interesting, isn't it? There's all that talk about Rosie the Riveter and women, you know, filling the positions that men had vacated because they were fighting in World War II, but no one ever talks about, well, what were the kids doing? Were they staying at home making sandwiches and fighting amongst each other? But in fact, Lady Gowrie started this amazing movement of preschool, or what's now become largely preschool education, hasn't it?
Well, it's long daycare from zero to school age, from naught to year six. Years old.
Yeah.
And, so ranging, they also, Gowrie centres also, not only do we have the early learning centres, which are all geared for across New South Wales,
mm-hmm.
But we also have the long daycare, the early education centres, and we have OOSH, which is the after school hours care. Many different services that we have under the one hat, one umbrella.
Yes, and I know that when I've had my little ease, my sister, who's older than me, and didn't always tell me what to do, but occasionally did. She said, get them into that the Lady Gowrie preschool.
Well, that's where I actually did my, when I did my training, got my diploma, that's where I did my practical experiences. Work placement, they call it these days. We used to call them pracs when I was in my day. And at Erskineville is where I did my practical experiences, and I loved it because you could move along with the children, because the way that they structure the centre is... they have the educators moving up into the rooms, the next room with the children as they get older. They sort of move with them, so they've got like
so you've
that
always
connection.
Got Miss Susan.
We don't. There's not like room for room.
Right. Okay. I stand corrected. All right. So look, something really wonderful is happening here in Armidale. Of course, back in when was it? About 2017 or 2018. We started to receive some of the humanitarian migrants from, or refugees who from the Yazidi community. I guess the push has been for them to be able to learn English as quickly as possible. So do you want to explain to us a little bit about what the Early Linux Centre does, and how it might differ from a normal...
How it pumps.
How it pumps. Thanks, Susan.
I'll put it in my own words. So the children that we have at the centre are... Their families and the children all are from Iraq, right. And they're here on humanitarian or refugee visas, as you said. In Armidale, also at the TAFE, the Adult Migrant English Program is government-funded, of course, so... Any migrant, regardless of the circumstances, has, I think within 6 months of coming to Australia or settling in the community, are obliged to take up English lessons.
Right, so that's mandatory.
Yeah, it's part of their visas, even for people that have migrated to Australia. And that's part of their visa, especially if they want to work, it's part of their visa agreement.
Okay.
That's my understanding anyway. And so... It used to be a weird amount, like 510 hours of English learning. The government, about a year or so ago, changed that, saw that there was a real need, especially I could see a real need for it here in Armidale with our Azidi families. That 510 hours sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot when you're illiterate in your own language to begin with, to be learning a whole new language.
Yeah.
So many of our parents weren't getting to conversational English that you might expect perhaps of somebody else that's migrated.
That's such an interesting thing, isn't it? But it's not what we're talking about, but that issue of if you're illiterate in your first language, it can be harder to learn a second and third language.
Yes, and I mean the joy for the children is that they're learning language anyway, so they're soaking up. So lucky in that regard of being able to be multilingual or bilingual from the get-go because they're soaking up sounds and words.
So they're learning the language in the way that children learn, which is quite different to adult learning.
Through immersion, you know. So all the children that we have at the service are Kurdish Azidi refugees.
Right.
We have had a few other children of parents from other cultures and nationalities that have used the service, but predominantly that's the children. That's all the children we have at the moment.
Right, so... I guess there would be some challenges sitting there with people or the children of a community who've actually come from a very harsh, in fact, a genocidal kind of experience themselves with a lot of violence and
we found when we opened, we opened May 2018, the beginning of the second term of the school year.
Mm-hmm.
And with our first lot of families that came and children that came was particularly difficult and a learning curve because most of those children really had seen and experienced trauma directly. Now we have the children that, younger siblings that have come on and they might have seen anything directly or witnessed anything directly, but their parents are suffering trauma, so children just really react from that and soak that up. And if it's in their home, the parents are depressed and sad. That reflects on for the children, and so it can be quite challenging.
So the kinds of traumas that you're more or less working around within the families that you're helping or that you're working with would be things like older siblings having disappeared. We know that a lot of the older but unmarried girls were taken for sex slavery, and many of the men have either died or disappeared.
Even young boys have been, forcefully sort of enlisted into terrorist armies and things like that as well.
Yeah.
So it's that, and it's also that coming here and having to leave, I can't imagine it myself, but having to leave other family members behind, like our young parents that having to leave their mothers and fathers behind. Mm. And, they're having things happening over there, like still horrible, traumatic things going on over there, and parents dying or being murdered, and they're dealing with it so far away, not being able to have that comfort of, or even knowing what I'd be like if I just couldn't have my mum around when I needed her, when I'm trying to bring up a family and in a strange country. And, you know, they're very, very thankful to be here. They're just, like, so thankful. But I'm sure you and I would agree that if they could have it another way, they would.
Yeah, of course, of course. So, in terms of what kind of things do you do with the kids? Are you a normal? Do you offer a normal sort of preschool curriculum or
very normal?
It's abnormal. No, of course it's not.
No, but I know what you mean. Like any centre, that we do program to the children's likes and interests, but a lot of our program is also centred around further learning experiences about safety, and we bring families into that too, because especially that topic of safety, because safety is taught, so it's not something you just naturally know.
Give us a few examples.
Well, for instance, even just when families first coming here, road safety, you know,
of course,
you know, not understanding that, you know, the children would run out, and lucky now we're kind of a gated centre now that we have, so it's easier for when our parents come to collect their children, not just running out the door, because our parents would have no idea and just let their children go. And we've got the car park there at the front of TAFE, as you'd know, and that's kind of where we are, and they would dash out. So things like that, so our parents need to learn about. So we do road safety with children in the centre, but we're also, we'll go into the with the teachers in the classrooms and give some safety, do some road safety things, or the clinic nurse might visit and I'll go around with the clinic nurse and talk about things like when to start solids for young children, from babies when they're ready to start solids, and helping them to enroll in school.
If this is your first child, or and you've never had, and you don't have your mum around, who's going to tell you?
Yeah, and look, you know, many of our families don't have formal education. Haven't had any formal education themselves. So, which would have been, it's not a fate, but would have been the same circumstance if they were still in Iraq. Would have been the same circumstance for these children.
There's with no pretty such minimal thing as, support.
That's right. So they may not have been schooled either. So they have so much. They see all the opportunity that they have here. Apart from being safe, they have a lot more opportunity in Australia.
I remember going to the little picnic spot over at the Arboretum, and there was a young Azedi girl. They just had a family picnic or something, and she had a little switch, a branch or a little switch from a gum tree, and she was enthusiastically sweeping the whole area so that there would be no crumbs or anything left at all. And I was so impressed. And of course, I had a little chat with her dad, and he was really excited to be here. And
they really are. And the children in their play when we first opened, especially, was having to teach them how to use things, how to play. You wouldn't think that children need to be taught how to play.
Yeah, this is really interesting. We talked about this earlier. Yeah. How do you teach someone to play?
Well, it's more to the extent of being told, like yourself, I guess, but it's more to the extent of, say, for example, to be very basic, putting an art easel out for the children, and paint and brushes or whatever you want to use. But even something simple like just paint pots and brushes and, you know, paper, they would just stand there and look at it because they didn't know what to do with it. So just modelling to them that this is what you can do. They all now put their hands in it and it's all over the place. But it was that, it was a real learning curve for myself and educators, my team, to, I guess, reflect and sort of get rid of any of those biases that you have and those expectations you have of sort of going, okay, well, why would they know how to use it if they've never seen it before? It's quite sort of surprising. And some of the things that they know how to do, like my daughter, peeling their own eggs, like one-year-olds peeling their own eggs to eat their own eggs and things. And, you know, my daughter's 13. She'd just be like, Mom, can you do that for me? You know what I mean? It's just they're very, very skilled anyway, but they're very, have a different set of skills and skill sets at a very early age, and very resilient. but just didn't know how to play. And that's just that opportunity of having those resources there.
And I believe you've now got somebody working there with you who's actually Azidi herself?
Yeah, she's not at the moment, but she has been. She's actually still learning English, so she's the days that we need her the most. We have a lot of children. She actually has her youngest daughter in care with us because she's doing her English classes. She's almost finished her Cert 3 and then she'll be finished.
Right.
She has had some formal education and we're able to, I guess, mentor her in a way to get through. She did her Cert 3 in early education and at TAFE and she was... Yeah, now she's able to work. She's wanting to help her community. That's her reason why she said that she's doing all these courses and things. She wants to be able to help her immediate community but also be part of the Armidale community. Mm. So she's doing now, she's looking at doing a individual support course at TAFE for to get into community services as well. So she just wants to have all these skills that...
Well, isn't
yeah,
that,
yeah, wonderful. It's great being able to have someone like... this educator with us because it gives us a really good understanding. The children love it because they can hear their home language. I can speak a little bit of it, but it's very dodgy. but they can have their home language, which is really important.
So that's the... Is it Kamunji? Is that
yeah, Kamunji, that's right.
I've got
it. You got it. We were practising the other day. Yeah, that's there's a few dialects, but that's one of the main dialects of Kurdish, Azidi dialect and Kamunji. Yep.
Right, and of course it must be... Do the children ever talk in Kamunji and you don't know what they're talking about?
Oh, yes, but we get to know when they're talking about us. yes, it is, but when we first opened, it was quite a little funny story. I think I might have told you the other day, I'm not sure,
stories.
But no one else has heard it.
Yeah.
Was when we first opened... You know, when you say things when a child's doing something like, you know, they'd be climbing furniture and jumping off tables, that's what our children used to be like. And we'd go, like, don't do that, you know, trying to think of different words for stop rather than saying stop all the time. You know, not safe. And then found out, they'd look at us like, what are you talking about? Like, didn't understand, they keep doing it. And then we found out from one of the parents that could speak English quite well, were saying, you know, this is happening. And we're saying, they're saying because means yes, is slang for yes in Kamunji. So we're all saying, yes, yes, jump off that table. And without realising it. But we've learnt little tricks and one of the... When the children were particularly upset, you know, waiting for mum to come, that separation, because a lot of our children have never been looked after by anybody before, never been in anybody else's care.
You mean they've never been looked after by anyone but their parents?
But their parents, that's right.
Yeah.
Never been in anybody else's care before, which... can happen with a lot of children, but these children coming from traumatic circumstances, it's quite traumatic when they don't understand the language, you don't understand each other.
Mummy's gone.
Mum's dropped them off and you say, that's okay, mum will be back. I wonder how many times they've heard, don't worry, dad will be back, don't worry, mum will be back, and they haven't come back. So that's kind of looking at from their perspective as well, it's a little bit tougher for them. And so I'd always say, mama soon. Before I learnt that you actually say mama abet, which mum abet means mama come soon.
Come back.
You know, mama come back. But I'd just always say, mama soon. So my name was Mama Soon from there on in. And now it's, even now when they say Sue, they'll say soon. They just call me soon. Hey, soon. Obviously said it a lot.
Oh, that's really sweet. That's really sweet. Of course, there's a darker side to the background of these kids, and children do play act what they've seen. How do you deal with, or can you sort of unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, their play can be quite, not necessarily aggressive, but it's not the aggressive, like hitting or anything like that, that's the most disturbing as an adult to see a young child do. It's more about the silent games that they might play. There has been games where they'll play that they have, you can see without understanding the language that they're playing captive games and you know, being soldiers and moving people around. So it's not even necessarily that they're doing anything aggressive, but it's just that, and then a child will get upset and start crying, and you don't know what's gone on, but you know it's upsetting to them. But they're acting out, I guess, how other children will act out what they've seen in their play, you know, and it's just
they've
a different
seen in their daily lives, and they're
It's like copying off cooking in home corner. I don't mean to be sweep it away, but it is the same kind of thing, perhaps, that playing in home corner, you're copying off what you see at home, and that mum's cooking or dad's cooking. Shouldn't suggest mum because dad's cooked too, but so that's kind of disturbing, and. Yeah, just some of the aggressive play.
Some of these children have seen horrific things, and they're reenacting them. We don't want to go into detail on radio, but they've seen horrific things, and you see that back played, I guess. So how do you handle that?
We just talk to them, and especially the older children. I'm mainly based in the preschool room. I do visit our babies because it's good to get a cuddle. But we have young children, even one-year-olds, that are quite aggressive with their play, but the older children, we can talk to them, and their English, a lot of the older young children we have is very good, because they have big families, so predominantly, and so they might be the youngest of six or youngest. We had one child that used to come with us. He's at school now, that he was the youngest of 13. I couldn't cope with that at all. I can't cope with three. So their English is quite good, because they've got teenage, even older. We've got one child that we, last year, that she's now just started kindergarten this year, but we also, when we first opened, we had her auntie was with us. So it's just a lot of very close in age and a lot of children. So their English is quite good. So we can sit down with them and talk to them about what's appropriate play and, you know, moving them along to something else, and how about we do it this way?
Yeah, talking about moving along, we were discussing some of the. You're getting Australian-born babies coming into the centre now.
I know, it's so exciting. We had a visit just the other day from one of our mums that wants to come back next term. They love learning and really want to be part of the community. And she was so excited that, like, she goes, "I'm going to come back." She brought along her two-month-old son, and he was born prematurely, so she looked really tired, but she wants to come back and learn English, she said, next term. So she wants to come back when her little baby's 4 months, and we've got siblings. We've got probably about five children that I know of that have been born in Armidale that we've had have in the centre.
And they have some special kind of...
Oh, I know their names.
Yes.
Well, first off, the first name was of one of the children that was first born here, Parisa. Now, that's not a Kurdish name. It sounds very, very, bohemian, but it's because it was a good friend of theirs, Australian friend, that just so happens to have this kind of name. But then we have a David that comes, and this little boy that visited the other day with his mum, or baby, two-month-old, his name's Nathan. So they're really choosing
Aussie names.
You really are, you know, and which is great. And then we've had children that do have traditional names as well that have been born here. But they're, yes, and one other little girl, Rosaline, you know, and that's not a Kurdish traditional name. So very different from the, you know, Sida, Sedras, Suhil, you know, all the Kurdish names. But so they're all really, and they're very excited when they come in for enrolment, and they've got their birth certificate, the Australian birth certificate.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful. So I think we were talking about, of course, your aim is to make these children feel safe and secure and positive about the life ahead of them, and as well as giving them the basic preschool skills, which would be part of any preschool learning, early learning centre. You've said that now there are families that are really settled. Well, how do we define settled? Or how do you define settled? How do you see settled when you're?
I guess when they first come here, they're set up. They're with SSI, Settlement Services International. They're based here in Armidale. And they're given the basic needs that they need, like roof over your head, links to Centrelink, getting enrolment in the English program, getting all those necessities, and a mobile phone, because they need a mobile phone to be able to call doctors, schools, whatever. That process, I just see now as, well, for instance, having that mum that's done her Cert 3.
Yep.
Where many of the men have work. You know, you can imagine, I can't imagine being a man because I'm not a man, but imagine me, especially a culture that is very not male-dominated, but it's a matriarchal...
It's a patriarchal system.
Mm. And being so disenfranchised and feeling so emasculated, not being able to look after your family, that's where a lot of our fathers and men's depression comes from as well. But they're able to get jobs, you know, even if working at the tomato farm, or we have one parent that's, you know, repairing windows, replacing windows in cars, and he's got, you know, they're getting employment, driver's licenses, cars, you know, being able to get around and be part of the community. I see them out shop. My daughter hates it because, you know, whenever I go out to do grocery shopping, you always see someone, you know, I don't want to go with you, you know, you always, I'll just be a minute, I'm just going to talk, because I'd see all my parents out and the families out. Although the children give you an odd look because they don't understand you have a normal life outside of the centre.
And of course, you're the boss lady there, aren't you? You're the director of the centre. I think I forgot to mention that, Susan.
Oh, that's all right. I'm coordinator, which is same, but we don't really have the... it's a different kind of service, but, yeah, they call me a coordinator. I coordinate everybody.
You coordinate everybody. Oh, that's great. That's great. So how long do you think the centre will operate? Obviously, it's the government program from the federal government designed to support... or provide care for children while their parents are actually face-to-face learning at TAFE English. So this could go on for a while, I suppose.
Well, there's always going to be migrants, but my understanding is that whether they settle in Armidale or not, but there are more Azeri refugees. Well, we've started flying again, haven't we? COVID sort of restrictions have lifted for flying. I know that there are a lot of families here that are trying to reunite with extended families, like some of our parents wanting to reunite with their brothers or parents. But I know that there are some more families coming, or people coming into Australia.
Yeah.
But whether they settle here or not, I don't know. But look, I had my contract for work when I first started in 2018 was for 5 years. Mm-hmm. But that will just keep going, because now that the government no longer has that restriction of that 510 hours, now it's, I'm not sure, it's at a level, it's more at a level of ability of the it's not how many hours you do.
How many skills you get.
Yeah, so it's a level of completing your Cert 3 or so rather than having children only able to be with us for that many hours, they can continue. And there's more and more children being born, so... You
wonderful.
Know, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful, Susan. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Not that I can think of, just that we're trying to look at also at our centre. We've got a lovely outdoor area, so trying to look at fancying that up a little bit. We have a yarning circle there, so I'm trying to I'm doing a course at the moment through work, speaking to our Aboriginal liaison person from Gowrie that... we have been doing an online webinar with her, with other different services, not just Gowrie people, and about connecting with community. So that's my next step to connect with community is to connect with our Aboriginal community to bring that properly and better into our service, embed it better into our service.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for coming in, Susan. It sounds like this is a really good news story. There's been a obviously the reason these Azeri families and any refugees are here is because there's something, you know, difficult in their background. But what a wonderful place to be, and it's I know Armidale is being regarded as a great success story in terms of settlement.
Yeah, I think it has, and just...
And I think your centre's won an award, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, yes. Yes, I did, but it was for my centre, but humanitarian award through the Refugee Council and Starts International with, that was 2019-ish. Yeah, the regional award for education. Yeah.
Oh, congratulations, Susan.
Yeah, it was great.
All strength to you, and we wish really well as you continue to... work with all refugees, but in our case, of course, it's that really delicate and precious job of helping the Yazidi families settle into our community.
Thank you. It truly is the best job in the world. It's one, the only job I've had. I can honestly say that I wake up in the morning and don't go, oh, I've got to go to work. I actually really look forward to going to work. I'm pretty old. I've had lots of jobs. I've never done
that. You don't look old at all.
Thank you so much, Margaret. I've really enjoyed telling the story.
Great. Well, we might have you on later on if there's any special stories about new things happening in the Early Learning Centre. So we call it the Early...
It's an Early Learning Centre.
Early Learning Centre at TAFE. Wonderful. Oh, we're going to have some music now.